Welcome again to Rampage on the Airwaves. Today we have a very special show for you, part one of at least a three-part series on the history of local music. My name is Wayne Thunder, and throughout this series I will be talking to Leonard Susay, who has produced more prominent and significant local albums than anyone else that I know. He's been producing local music for about 11 years now, and his credits include none other than Electrical, West Grand Boulevard, Ronin, Botfax, Force Vomit, too many to mention, and that's why this is going to be a three-part series anyway. There's a whole lot of material to go through, so I'll get started quickly by introducing Leonard Susay himself. He is currently the owner of Snakeweed Private Limited, which is where a lot of the aforementioned bands recorded their landmark albums. Snakeweed was established about 6 years ago, but before that, Leonard was part of the now defunct Mastering Suite. And before that, he had quite a humble beginning, as I found out.
I started actually working in mix studios, but I wasn't like the engineer there or anything. I mean, I was just like the Jaga Jam. You know, like what we all call the Jaga Jam. So the Jaga Jam is actually the guy or the girl who sits behind the counter, picks up the phone whenever it rings, and, you know, like takes bookings for people who want to book jam. And then, like, you know, there many times people call and say, "Hey, book jam. And then, you know, I say, like, "Okay, what day, what time? You know, don't be late. What's your phone number?" So that was what I used to do. But then there was a time when, you know, Jerry Chua, the owner of Mix at that time, was quite busy because he wanted to play Nintendo games. And then, and then he said, like, "Hey, Leonard, why don't you take over the recording?" And then I said, "Oh, okay. So I started recording. I mean, that was how I got my first big break in recording. It became a habit because I started doing more recordings and Jerry kept getting higher scores.
So it was at Mix Studios that he first got started, and that's when he met Neuro Vibe, whose song Free My Soul I'm going to be playing for you after this. And Leonard recalled the impact that Neuro Vibe had on him.
I remember they came up to me in the studio and then they said that they wanted to record a five-song demo. So I set up the mics and, you know, we started recording. And the first song that they played was Free My Soul. And I was so amazed by, you know, the ability and the talent and the songwriting and the song itself. And it was after they played the first song that I said, "Hey, you know, why don't you do a complete full album instead of just a five-song demo?" And they said they didn't have the funds to do it. Then I remember telling them, like, "Don't worry about the funds, you know, like because I was trying to start a label at the time called Snakeweed. And I told them that I had a friend who was really interested in, like, investing in some bands. But they didn't believe me at first because they thought that, you know, I was just lying." They didn't believe me at first. But then after our second meeting, then they started believing, because we just started recording and, you know, like, they didn't have to pay for any single thing, and they started believing that it was happening. The sad thing about this story is that not very many people know about the band Neuro Vibe. I mean, it's only a small group of people in the underground scene who have heard of them, who know who they are. But they were one of the pioneers that, you know, started this whole revolution in creating more awareness for the scene. And I remember when they first came back after winning the competition, you know, there was a very, very small article in the Straits Times that said that, "Oh, Neuro Vibe, local band, wins Asian Grand Championship Yamaha band competition." And that was it. You know, there was no follow-up. There was nothing about the band. And they told me that the Indonesian band that came in third went back to Indonesia and they became, like, huge stars. You know, like, everyone was so proud of them. Whereas in Singapore, you know, like, nobody cares. I mean, most people know of bands like Electrico, Ronin, The Suns. Local bands have come to the forefront. They've become more mainstream. You know, they appear on radio, they appear in newspapers. But, you know, there had to be something that was done about 10 years ago just to build a foundation. And it's not like Electrico came out and, you know, they were number one on radio. It's not like Ronin came out and they were number one on radio right immediately. Because there was a time when, you know, it was almost impossible to get local songs on radio. But, you know, there were all these great bands last time that laid the bricks and set the foundation to make it possible for bands like Ronin, Electrico nowadays, you know, to get so much recognition.
Free My Soul. are listening to part one of the history of local music on Rampage on the Airwaves. My name is Wayne Thunder, and my guest for this series is the godfather of local music himself, Leonard Susse. And the song I just played for you, Neuro Vibes' Free My Soul, which was one of Leonard's first ever projects. Okay, moving on to a band that is musically very, very different, but coming from the same era and equally important, none other than heavy metal legends Ossuary, a very, very tight and explosive group that I had the fortune of catching live when they were at their peak. When the album was released, I remember it getting rave reviews from radio stations and magazines and labels as far away as Canada and UK. But Leonard also revealed a long-kept secret about Sharyl, the legendary drummer of Ossuary, which ultimately contributed to the band's demise.
During the whole time that Ossuary was in existence, Sharyl had, you know, he was suffering from bone disease. But he kept it to himself, and you know, like when you see him perform, he's always giving 199%.
He's one of the most explosive drummers I've seen.
Yeah, you know, he just explodes on stage. He explodes whenever he hits the drums. But you know, after every gig, he disappears. You don't know where he goes to, and then you'll find him actually vomiting in the toilets. You know, like vomiting blood and all that, because he gives everything, but you know, he's also suffering at the same time.
The band and Leonard also ran into some trouble across the border, as he recalled the entire story to me.
We tried to take the album across to Malaysia, because Malaysia has a huge metal fan base, and you know, like a lot of people in Malaysia were requesting for Ossuary CDs, Ossuary cassettes. So we decided to Hannes, who's the singer of Neural Vibe, and I decided to bring across the border 200 copies of Ossuary CDs. So we carried it.
Malaysia Bole.
That time was Malaysia Bole 2020. Maybe in 2020, then they Bole lah. Anyway, we hand carried the CDs. We walked across the causeway, because we did, you know, like we couldn't carry 200 CDs on the bus, and we didn't have a car. So we hand-carried the CDs, put them in like luggage bags, and then we just, you know, just dragged them across the causeway to the other side. We got into a taxi, and then the taxi drove us to the Johor Senai Airport, and we took a plane to KL. So when we were in KL, I remember we were trying to find like some of the headquarters of some of the biggest record stores in Malaysia. So we went to like some of the shopping malls, and we asked them, where's your headquarters? You know, we went to record stores like Swaku, and asking the salespeople there, hey, where's your headquarters? You know, so they, like, some of them gave us the addresses, and we went to Music Valley.
Is it?
And I approached the sales manager, and I said, like, oh, we're a record label in Singapore, and we have these two artists, Neuro Vibe and Ossuary, but we wanted to push Ossuary first. And we showed him the CD, and we said that, you know, we wanted to put it in stores. And he looked at the CD, and he said, hey, this looks very familiar. And then I said, it's the first release from a Singapore band, actually, so I don't think you've seen it before. And then he told me, no, everywhere have already. Then I was like, what do you mean everywhere have? Then he said, oh, this CD, everywhere have already, cassette tapes and all that. Then I was shocked, because I found out that the CD was actually pirated in Malaysia already. You know, it was available to kids. It was, you know, it was available everywhere in like Pasar Malams, in some shops and all. So he said, you don't believe, you go to the stores and see. Then I said, like, where did all these CDs come from, or where did all this product come from? And at the same time, there was a guy there. I don't want to mention names, but there was a guy there. And the manager said, yeah, that's the guy. He's from he's the record label that's distributing the Ossuary CDs. And I remember I was like so furious, right? That I shouted a vulgarity, and then I chased the
you
guy.
You can scold as much as you want.
So I shouted, fucking chibai. Kaninawe chow chibai. And then I ran after the guy, and he ran again. And he ran into his car, and I chased after him, and then he got into his car and he sped off. So I remember calling the Malaysian embassy, and I said, like, your chibai people.
You really said that?
No, I didn't say that. I just said, like, you know, someone in Malaysia is pirating my product, so can I take legal action? And the Malaysian embassy said, like, why don't you just forget about it? And then I said, like, how can I forget about it? You know, it's my product. And then they said, like, okay, there are three things you need to do. The first thing you need to do is go and hire a lawyer. Because if this goes to court, then you need a lawyer. And then they said the second thing I needed to do was to go and hire a private investigator because they needed evidence. So in order for me to have a case, I would have to get a private investigator to find out the date and the time when they were making the product. That means when the CD plants were pressing the CDs or duplicating the cassettes.
Yeah.
Because only then, right, you can raid the place and you say, look, this is proof.
Mm.
Because if you raid it and they're not making it at that time, right, then they can counter-sue you.
Mm.
So I was thinking, I mean, they're giving me so many problems, I might as well just, you know, forget it. And it was also at the same time that I met the MD of a major record label down there, who actually was very interested in signing Ojuri. And I remember he put us up in a really nice hotel, the Concord Hotel. Then, you know, he paid for everything, gave us dinner and everything. And then he told me something which, you know, until today still infuriates me. He said that, come on, you know, like everywhere, right, even the major record labels pirate their own product because it's the only way they survive. So when he said that, I was, you know, I kind of like gave up going into Malaysia because after all, Malaysia boleh, what?
The song Rip was born directly as a result of this fiasco, and it is suitably very, very angry.
Rip actually has a double meaning. It means rest in peace, because that was the last song that they ever recorded, and it also written after we found out that the product was being pirated. If you listen to the song, right, if you listen to the lyrics, it you know, it pokes fun at the pirates in Malaysia, but not necessarily Malaysia. I mean, it's for pirates everywhere. So it says, you know, fuck you die or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Pirates were thinking when they were ripping off these guys, because they sound like they will tear your fucking ass to pieces, man. Cherie, true legends of the local music scene. I can only speak for myself, but they were a band that I really, really looked up to when I was starting out. Plus, Sharil had long hair. He had hair up to his back for 3 years in poly, and he never got caught once. So, Sharil, my hero. Fast forward to a couple of years until when Leonard Sousse moved to the mastering suite, and a new chapter in Leonard's career with a decidedly supernatural twist to it.
There was a ghost in the other studio. It was the mastering suite, and the ghost was actually a small Toyo kept by Chong, the mastering engineer of the mastering suite. We had a lot of weird experiences in the studio because at that time, Ivan Wee was the bassist of Shirin's Closet, and he used to go around the studio walking naked because he'd, you know, take off his pants and just walk around naked. And then he'll tell everyone, come see my black cock. You know, and I've seen it, and it's black. I don't know why. He's Chinese. So it all happened like that. And then there was one day he offended the Toyol by climbing onto the photocopying machine, and he took off his pants and he photocopied his black cock, and he made a lot of copies of it. Then he went distributing those copies to his friends. Say, hey, see my black cock, see my black cock. So I think the Toyol was really, really angry and upset because, you know, maybe the Toyol's one was blacker, but yeah. Then it started to get really angry and started doing things to the recording, to the band and all that. I remember a very, very vivid incident. The band was getting ready to record in the studio, so they went to... We had two studios in the mastering suite, two rooms, actually. So they went to the smaller room to try and write and work out the parts before they moved to the big room to record. And they claimed that the chair was rocking by itself. And this was right after Ivan photocopied his black cock. And they claimed that the chair was rocking by itself. So they ran out of the studio, everyone except for Gerald, who didn't believe their stories, because it was Kamal, the drummer, at the time who saw the chair rocking. He just scooted out of the studio. And Ivan followed after that. But Gerald thought that, you know, they were playing a joke on him. But then we all saw the chair rock by itself. So we all knew that it was the Toyol doing something. But Gerald still didn't believe because he said he was Christian and, you know, there was no such thing and all that. And then we proceeded to the big room to record the drums. The funny thing was, you know, we left the drum set the way it was. It was, you know, like all the toms and all the snares. But when we went back to the big room, right, every single drum, right, was broken.
Our ghostly friend even went as far as to contribute a part to a Shirin's Closet song.
It was really eerie because when we were recording the drum tracks, right, Kamal had his headphones on and he heard a voice singing to him, you know, so he just followed the voice and he started playing the drums, and he heard lyrics to the songs also. So when he came back into the room and he said that when he was recording, he heard a voice that was singing to him, he asked who was singing to him, and we said nobody. And he claims until today that, you know, there was a voice singing to him. And, you know, we asked him what it was like, and he said that, you know, the voice said this, said that. So we wrote down what exactly he said, and that became the first verse of the song. The other thing was Gerald was also playing the guitar at the same time that we were recording the drums. But when it came out on the computer, it wasn't a guitar sound at all. It was actually a toy piano. And we don't have toy piano sounds in the studio, so we don't know where that sound came from. But we left it in the track, and you can hear it. It's at the beginning of the song, actually.
That doesn't sound like anything other than a guitar to me, but Leonard claims it was not the way it was recorded, so we shall give him the benefit of the doubt. In any case, I'm going to play the song that Leonard selected, which is What Goes Around Comes Around. It was written by the frontman of Shirin's Closet, Gerald Stallman, and performed in a style that became as trademark as it was inimitable. Enjoy.
It's all because of you. Sundays you complicate my mind 500 times.
That leaves us with Leonard's final pick for the show, The History of Local Music Part 1. It's a band that I can't talk up too much because I was a part of it, none other than the Notorious Boardfucks. And the song that Leonard has chosen is an equally notorious one. Somehow, it was voted by Big O Magazine in the year 2000 as the number 2 Singapore song of all time. Don't ask me how, because I also don't know. Part 2 of The History of Local Music will be coming soon, so check back at www.rampageontheairwaves.com. And I will leave Leonard to demystify this last song for you. See you soon.
I remember when the Boardfucks first came out, they were not called the Boardfucks, and then they were playing heavy metal music because they were trying to emulate Ojuri also at that time.
Mosh Pit.
Yeah.
That's what it was called.
And then one day Sanjeev woke up and he said, I don't want to do metal anymore.
Or was it
yeah, because the Boardfucks were really fucked up at that time because they really couldn't play metal. So they decided to do their own shit. And then they came out with a song called Zoite. But let's not talk about Zoite, because actually my favorite Boardfart song is the song called Aisyo Kanmai. Aisyo Kanmai, right, was recorded in the studio, entirely in the studio. But it sounds like it was recorded in a stadium full of people.
It's not true. It was recorded at Wembley.
No. It was recorded at Masri Street
him.
In Paya Lebar Road. It was a very interesting recording because we had a lot of people come into the studio. I mean, we had friends of the Boardfucks who volunteered to come in and be like the crowd.
And be part of the 60,000. We had 60,000 people in Masri Street, right?
I think we only had like 5 because the Boardfucks at that time only had 5 friends.
Oh, so we had to cut and paste the crowd noise.
Yeah, we had to record it over and over and over and over to make it sound like there were like 10 people actually. But it was interesting because at that time I remember the Toyol wasn't very happy with Sanjeev Velu because Sanjeev Velu had made funny remarks or you know, said Chibai one too many times. I mean, Aisyo Kanmai was a whole experience because I think it was the last song that we recorded for the album, right? So it was like the finale to, you know, that Boardfucks album lah. And we tried to make it as fun as possible and as memorable. We recorded it live, so, you know, like everything that was captured at that moment in that 10 minutes, everything that was captured in that 10 minutes, you know, was a memory or an experience at that point in time. Every time I listen to that song, it always brings me back to the Mastering Suite, the Toyol, and the Boardfucks.